You'd almost think we were actually into that pre-Halloween scenario. Ardeen Taylor, there's a ghost in my house. Maybe there's a ghost in the machine, actually. It's really all sorts of fun things now. But if we want to actually deal with exorcising those demons and putting them onto the right way to truth, happiness, justice, and general all-round wonderfulness, we need to turn to Ilana Raine. Isn't that right, Ilana?
Hi, Alex.
Hey,
how are you?
Very good indeed. And you've brought your special guest writing partner to the airwaves as well this evening, because we say a happy hello and welcome to the Midweek Drive to the legendary Brian Smith. How are you, Brian?
Good. Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
A delight and ever. We already have to pass on the words from Arthur Weingarten that he thought Kinky Boots was an outstanding production. So there we are. Just sort of pass that on there. And words of Arthur Weingarten, very important in any way, shape or form, as we've said.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Ilana, share with us, where are you calling us from today? Where are we connecting with you, with your good selves? And what's the weather like and so on before we get into what sort of things you're discovering and exploring?
Well, Alex, I'm really thrilled to say that I've moved and we're in a brand new studio, and it's in the Los Feliz Hollywood Hills. So I've gotten even closer to the Hollywood sign, and so close, in fact, you can't even see it. And on the street, you can see just two letters, and it's H and O. So every now and then I just go, ho.
Looming overhead.
It's an inspiration. It's almost like a narcotic to just check out that sign so close.
It was an American sociologist who actually termed coined the phrase narcotizing dysfunction. So there we are. That was Karl Lagerfeld. So there we are. You're putting it into action. And I never thought I'd actually use narcotizing dysfunction on the Midweek Drive, but thank you, Ilana, for facilitating that.
It's a great opportunity.
Simply through the HO of Hollywood. It's genius. Moving on. Emma, would you like to just swing the microphone in front of your good self and quiz? Because obviously we know that Ilana and Brian separately, they're superb. Cut together,
yes.
It's like nitro and glycerin. It's like, you know, an explosive combination which is going to revolutionise in all sorts of ways. So we've just been hearing about Arthur Weingarten's writing habits and things. Perhaps you'd like to take
Alex,
it.
You know, sadly, I couldn't tune into the earlier part of the broadcast, but, you know, Brian and I work together every day, and the first thing he wanted to mention to me was today is actually a very significant day in sci-fi history.
It is indeed. Tough. Marty McFly, are you there? Have you arrived? Yes. Are we in that sort of zone? You're quite right. We've celebrated that, and we'll continue to do so. Although, from our point of view, we're already at the end of that day, really.
Just a few hours
it's
left.
Sad. We've had lots of Back to the Future fun here in the UK. I think it's been broadcasts on the TV and all the cinemas are showing it, so it's great. Are you guys doing anything to celebrate the day?
You know, I saw recently at the Hollywood Bowl, the Los Angeles Philharmonic performed the score live with the movie airing, and they had the whole cast there. 17,000 people in attendance. The Guinness Book of World Records, largest viewing of it in the world. So that was very fun.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was a really incredible moment.
What is it about the movie, though, that makes it so popular? I mean, this is the sort of critical thing, because I mean, I think it's okay. I think it's. I mean, if I was pushed, I'd say, for me, Robert Zemeckis, actually, much better with Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And, you know, we don't get that, so we don't have Who Framed Roger Rabbit days all over the place. Is it the time thing?
I don't know. I think it just, you know, it matches that 80s zeitgeist of teen films in a certain way, but also expands to many different, you know, sci-fi viewers and comedy lovers, and it crosses a lot of genres.
Yeah, and I also think one reason it hits a lot of notes of collective longing and this fantasy that kids especially can have, teens, about, you know, the big what if, or what if I could have changed something, and, you know, and to me it always just struck the perfect note of fantasy, but, you know, grounded in a way that was just so approachable and universally identifiable. And I think that's why it makes it such a timeless, fun film that you can watch over and over again.
Well, that makes sense. And let's face it, if we were living in the future predicted by Terminator, we wouldn't be doing this radio show because it'd be done by a robot. Actually, it probably is. Penny Evans has just said, we sound a bit rough. Actually, I sound a bit rough. Late night. No, Penny, not a late night. Have I got the bug that seems to be spreading around the UK? Well, I've had it. It's kind of gone. It's all right. Don't worry. I'm still recovering from Arthur Weingarten's suggestion that...
It was the
I'd like to know what a late night consists for you, Alex, because, you know, I'm just a little curious.
Well,
in a pub or...
It depends on the company, clearly. It depends on the company in terms of how late the night happens to be and what I need to do the next morning, obviously. You know, that's the sort of classic line. I mean,
screenings of Back to the Future.
For instance, after this show, I do a 45-minute piece, all being well, using the medium of Skype. Mind you, the kind of challenges we've had with computers so far on the show, I keep very quiet, but we might have challenges with that. But he's going to be talking about the Culture Makers and the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey, all prepping the way for, of course, in a couple of weeks' time when, Ilana, you'll be sharing your thoughts on Things to Come.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
It's something come for me, so I'm very excited.
It all works splendidly. Eva, you've been quite quiet the whole show, and I'm conscious that we haven't noted in that countdown to your very own future history self that we are now a mere week and a half away from you taking the title of Miss Teen UK. Currently, yes. It has to be said to both Brian and to Ilana and our dear listener that Eva MacDonald is the holder of Miss Teen Lincoln.
I am, yes.
Wow.
And it's less than a week, actually. It's on Monday.
It's less than a week. It's on Monday. It's not even on a weekend. And Tuesday. So what will you be doing? Where will you be doing it? How can you channel the positivity of Ilana and Brian to kind of work their magic and send it across the airwaves?
Well, it's in Blackpool. Mm-hmm. So it's being held at the Blackpool, the Globe Theatre there. And, yeah, that's the location where it will
be. There you have it, Brian. If you ever want to write a musical about the Blackpool Globe Theatre, which, of course, is English for the Irish Dublin, because Dublin is Blackpool in Gaelic, so I've told. I believe that's the connection.
Ooh, right. So
Blackpool, Dublin. Don't be confused.
Every day is a school day.
That's exactly. You can obviously find that out in terms of where Eva will. And if she doesn't come back with the title, it's all right. She's always welcome on the show.
And she'll still be Miss Teen Lincoln.
She always will be Miss Teen Lincoln. So it's great stuff. Brian.
Responsibilities include, if you get the title, to be an ambassador for the UK to teens all over the world. Is that the deal?
I suppose you do, yes. You get to use the title for your own reasons, and you just get to use it with different charities that you do, different charity work. But there's not a specific area to go to, so it's using the title to your own expense, really.
Using the title to your own... Well, yes, yeah. just basically being the whole thing. That's important. A bit like being a midrick drive-out, actually. The responsibilities that, as Jessica will attest to, go with being a midrick drive-out. You've got to hold the owls. You've got to actually deal with milking cows.
I missed out on the owls.
They're
as
so
soon
sweet.
As I saw the pictures, I was like...
And then the ferrets, it's quite unbelievable. Meanwhile, let's move on, because as we alluded to, we have in Brian Smith a Tony Award-winning producer. A Tony Award-winning producer,
yes,
of the critically acclaimed smash hit Kinky Boots, based, of course, on the 2005 Miramax film, and not, Brian, anything to do with the Avengers or John Steed and Emma Peel's Kinky Boots song of the 1960s.
No. Not at all. No. I am one of many producers on the show, and I was very lucky to participate in the development of it. But it was really a milestone for me in my theater career, and I'm so happy to have been a part of it.
Well, not only that, you also were involved with Evita, with Ricky Martin, Living La Vida Loca. Ricky Martin. You just cannot stop yourself from breaking into that kind of routine with Ricky Martin. And indeed, Catch Me If You Can, of course, based on the original Steven Spielberg DreamWorks motion picture. So I've got to ask the question with that in your repertory. What's it like working with the legend that is Ilana Rain?
It is a constant delight, Alex. Every day is a new adventure, and I'm having so much fun working in a new medium and transitioning into film with Ilana, and bringing the things that I learned from my years of working in theater over into this space. So it's really been a dream come true.
And does this
we're so lucky to have each other.
We are. I mean, it's really... And we owe it to a mutual friend, and, you know, from high school, for me, and Brian worked with professionally, and it's just one of those really magical, serendipitous meetings that I can't help but feel, you know, was destined, because we just work so well together and we're such dear friends too. So
without wishing to
go, I took my friend out to a really big fancy dinner for introducing us.
Makes perfect sense. Without wishing to go down the spoiler routine, does this mean that, Ilana, you'll possibly be doing some musical stuff in future productions? I mean, can we actually see, in the midst of sort of one of your latest incarnations, suddenly bursting into singing and dancing? Bit of jazz hands, always very good, yeah?
Well, you know, I have a habit of bursting into spontaneous songs all the time anyway, but Brian and I, you know, we're writing a few action comedies now, and several times we've really thought about how we can integrate songs into the film, and we are working on it because we feel like it's a wonderful way to shift a tone, to bring about some drama, to just...
There are so many wonderful, memorable musical scenes in non-musical movies. Like, the first thing that's popping to mind is, you know, Ferris Bueller, you know, singing at the parade in Chicago, doing Dankeschön, or, you know, just unexpected moments that are really memorable that allow a little cross-genre fun.
And that's what intertextuality is all about, Brian. You know, that's the sort of... It's like postmodernism for a post-postmodern generation. Genius.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, thoughts of yourself?
I'm so sorry for being so naive, but could you tell me a little bit about Kinky Boots? Because I've never actually heard of it before.
Good question, Jessica.
It's a new musical that just opened in the West End. It's been playing on Broadway for the last 3 years. It's based on a 2005 film, and it tells the story of a small British shoe factory that's been in a family for generations, that goes bankrupt and then is saved by a cross-dressing performer. They start to make shoes for men who dress as women. And the factory kind of has to, you know, make peace with the drag queens. But the score is by Cyndi Lauper, and it is a whole lot of fun, incredible choreography and dancing, and it's just it's a blast.
Quite literally, London gets kinky. Kinky Boots at the Adelphi Theatre in London. You can book your tickets now if you wish, but there we are. Does that help the scenario?
Yeah. It sounds quite similar to Rocky Horror Show. Is that kind of correct?
A little less camp, maybe.
Okay.
a lot more.
Yeah, and also it's a little more all ages.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's totally a show for adults or family friendly. It's really for anyone.
Okay.
It's got a great message of acceptance and loving yourself and accepting other people.
Mm. Well, that's all we can ever ask for, really, in the world today. Eva, questions from yourself.
Oh, I don't know, because I was going to ask about the Kinky Boots and what...
Everybody wants to ask about the Kinky Boots.
It's so amazing. Interesting.
No, it was interesting.
You should have Ellipse and Kinky Boots. That's the whole thing. You know, it's like a combination of House of Frankenstein, really. Ellipse meets Kinky Boots.
Yeah.
Sorry. Eva.
Question's
still undecided there. That's all right. Hopefully we haven't... Yes, we're sort of working on it. So, Emma.
Well, I want to know, like, as you said, Ilana, that you are always... bursting into song. Do you guys, when you're working together, have a struggle? Because I feel that when I'm working for a long time and it gets to the end of the day, you just, you know, you want to chill out, and I end up singing songs and stuff like that. Does that hold you guys back, or does it make it more fun to work?
No, I think we tend to get our silliness out earlier in the day.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the day, we've really hit our groove of writing productively.
So technically...
we like to get out all that silliness right at the get-go.
Right, that's where we can fall into internet holes and, you know, send each other absurd links about, you know...
Back to the Future Day.
Back to the Future Day, or...
And has Brian, has Ilana shared her love of roller disco bikini girls that frequently sort of became an obsession in many ways, really, for her first shift over to California? It was every phone link we did, it was preceded by a roller disco derby sort of roller skating female. It's amazing.
Wow.
Perhaps not.
Well, look, Brian and I drive around a lot together, sometimes for inspiration, sometimes to just get lunch. And you know what? We're in California, Alex, and these bikini roller disco men and women are everywhere.
It's quite scary. A bit like,
they're
only,
real.
It's only a matter of time for David Attenborough does a location report on the whole thing.
Oh, wow, that would be a shocker.
We feel privileged to have been part of the Let's Chill Out in the Early Morning time with the writing partnership that is Ilana Ray and Brian Smith. We need to ask that final question. Emma, would you like to go for it, please?
Of course. Have you both enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Absolutely. I didn't even know I was doing this until an hour ago.
It's crazy.
Came over here.
Yeah. You're on the radio and you're speaking to people in the United Kingdom. It's amazing. It's like, whoa, you know.
It's a wonderful
and the world.
Surprise.
Exactly. SirenOnline.co.uk. And
will you be joining us again on the programme anytime soon? Have you enjoyed it?
Absolutely. This has been wonderful. I hope to come back. And I've listened before, so I'm a fan. I've listened when Alana's made appearance.
A round of applause for Tony Award-winning Brian Smith. If I'll go further than that, I'll give you the choice. Would you like Cyndi Lauper and Girls Just Want to Have Fun, or would you like a Ricky Martin track, probably Living La Vida Loca? Which one would you like to have, Brian?
I'm going to go with Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Alex.
I thought you might. What do you think, Eva? Truth seeker or director? Director or truth seeker?
Truth seeker?
Truth seeker. You don't sound too confident about that, but you know what? Hey, wait, it's been going. We'll go truth seeker.
From LA to Lincoln and via sirenonline.co.uk to the world, it's time for the midweek drive to connect with investigative filmmaker and planetary truth seeker, the one, the only, Phil Leoners.
Yay, exactly. That's the important thing.
That was such a good intro.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. It worked on every sense of the word, and he's breathing in the background there like some sort of asthmatic beaver, which is great, you know. Anyway, not to worry, life will continue. The first words Phil said to me on the phone, you're sick, aren't you? No, I'm just, well, actually, I suppose you could use that as a vernacular, couldn't you? I mean, sick. Perhaps not. Phil, good morning, sir. How are you?
I think we're all breathing like asthmatics just on your behalf, because it doesn't sound like you can take in any air with that congestion.
Oh.
Are you feeling all right? We're worried. We're worried about you.
Oh, listen, the monolith will help me. That's the important thing. Look, I'm reaching out to it now. It's there.
Yeah, that. But you know, that really sounds like inappropriate euphemisms.
Yeah. Okay. So you've heard, hopefully, a chunk of the 1 hour, 35 minutes that we've been attempting to entertain the Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk listener. Unless, of course, they're listening to this on podcast.
I think we have.
I think we've done a very good job.
Yeah,
thank you, Jessica. Thank
you,
Emma. That's very good. You're keeping quite quiet there, Eva. You're supposed to actually...
Yeah, I'd say yes.
Yeah, okay. So what points would you like to go back to? Would you like to... Or would you just want a cliffhanger ending, effectively? It's entirely up to yourself, Phil.
Maybe you could replay it, because I've not heard a second of it, including much of our conversation right here, because I'm still in a meeting. But I didn't need to be there. I don't. If I throw a hammer into the air, I don't need to be there to know that it falls. And indeed, I don't need to have listened to know how outstanding today's show was, or as I like to call it, the warm up for our discussion about 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Okay then. Well, that's obviously sort of end of that. Emma, where would you like to take Phil? I mean, maybe a Precy, because obviously you've been here. You can do that double duty as you used to do when you were based in Surrey as a listener. Now you've been a participant observer for a good chunk of the programme. Admittedly, you weren't there for Cameron Tilbury's slot, but Jessica could fill in on there. Share with Phil the sort of areas that he's missed.
Well, I've loved the show, Phil. I have to say, you've missed out on Arthur Weingarten. He was great and had a lot of stories to tell about his writing antics back in the day. So I think you're going to have to podcast
Harlan Ellison. And I even had to sort of point out that it was a Joan Collins, not Angela Lansbury in City on the Edge of Forever. Yeah. I thought it needed to be said.
Wait a second. Harlan Ellison was on the show today?
In spirit, after a fashion. I mean, as a good friend of Arthur Weingarten, why wouldn't he be on the show? You know, hopefully be cheap. I mean, what's he going to do? Sue us? Oh, actually, it's Harlan Ellison. He probably will. Oh, never mind. That's okay. It's a lawsuit of the week scenario. Harlan is all right. Anyway, keep going, Emma. Because obviously Phil's sort of taking these notes on the whole basis. We've just come out off Ilana Rain and Tony Award winning Brian Smith. Mm. Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots. I have to say, I've heard a lot about Kinky Boots as well, because I've seen it's only recently come to the West End in London, and I heard a lot about it. So I think I am going to have to check that out, actually. Mm. It sounds really, really interesting. And from what I've seen visually, it looks fantastic as well, doesn't it?
Yes. I saw some pictures.
So was the play, was the musical based on the film or vice versa, Alex?
I think it was based on the film. They said the film was in
2000. It was based on the film. And it was a British film. So that's interesting. An American Broadway musical gets made of a British film, and it's only now making it back to its native shores.
We'll give the Americans their chance, you know, just a bit.
Spoken as a true holder of dual nationality, Jess.
Has it been well received there?
Extraordinarily well received. Yeah. Why would you think it wouldn't be well received? Yeah, what is it about citizens of London that suggests they couldn't actually cope with a concept such as Kinky Boots?
I don't know, because I tend to believe that the UK has better taste where shows are concerned. So just because it played well here doesn't mean that it's going to play well there.
Mm. See, that's why he comes.
You see what I'm saying? You see what
it's like this. Yeah.
Well, hello.
Are you picking up what I'm
throwing
down?
This is Phil Lernis, premier co-host of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, your friend in podcasting, proudly introducing Emma Tinson, Jessica Ward, and Christy Bond. Official Midweek Drive presenters for the ideal program to be hearing while you're steering on Siren 107.3 FM.
No, Emma, I don't know what happened to Christy Bond either.
Did you write the line "hearing while you're steering"? That is so cheesy. Yeah.
We need some cheese.
I like
there.
It though. I
we
like
saw,
it.
We yeah. kind of picked, we picked up what Phil had thrown down for us and went with it. Sorry, Phil, carry on. It is your
I thought. I read it as written. I did not improvise on that one. There are a couple that I did improvise on, but that one I did not. Hey, Alex, a question that I'm sure you've been receiving, because I know I have, and not the least of which from my co-host Dean Haglund, is when and how people can hear these in-depth discussions about these classic science fiction films.
Are we talking about the culture makers? That's the name, because I've given up waiting for you to come up with a suitable title. I decided we go with the culture makers.
Wait a minute, I was supposed to come up. I was supposed to come up with a title. When did that happen? I've been kind of busy. Wow, I've been kind of busy watching all the films, doing all the notes, doing all the other work. I didn't know I was supposed to come up with a title.
They will start. They will start being released to the world via the medium of the World Wide Web, that internet scenario. In the beginning of November. Our first official screening is November the 4th, which of course will be Logan's Run, and they will be released either shortly before, because it enables people to obviously just pick up a few things they might want to sort, and then they will be there forevermore. That's good. I'm having a meeting next week to talk about a special way in which they can be embedded into the actual sort of university ether.
Ooh,
and so on.
Exciting. Mm. We're getting
technical. That's exciting, yeah, and we'll want to share that. But there has been, especially once word dropped that Dean, finally spoke to you at length about Metropolis. There's been a lot of interest on our end about when and how people might be able to hear that.
Good. Well, be patient. Wait for Trick or Treat. And basically before Thanksgiving, a long time before Thanksgiving, and just after Trick or Treat.
See, I'd say, you know, around Bonfire Night, but we don't have that in America.
They think, why would we want to actually take somebody who wished to blow up a government and actually sort of burn them?
I did try and explain Bonfire Night to an American once, and they were just like, why would you celebrate that? And I was like, I don't really know. But.
It's like burning the American flag. Sorry, CIA, honestly.
But, you know, actually, in parts of America, not for the same reasons, obviously, as you celebrate Bonfire Night, but that is a tradition. That is an autumnal tradition in parts of the U.S., especially in the Midwest. And the first time I ever witnessed it, it was terrifying. I was on location making my film Carl Rove, I Love You, and I was driving outside of Indianapolis, or actually outside probably Fort Wayne, Indiana, so very rural, and going up into the hills where there was a tiny little observatory up outside Fort Wayne. And to get there, I was driving through some spooky kind of woods, and I would see these bonfires every so often, and people gathered around them, and I really thought I was in the midst of a horror film. Like, you know, I mean, this is witchcraft. This is practicing sorcery going on. But it turns out it's just a festive part of the autumnal spirit in rural parts of the country. So,
well, after a fashion, but then again, Phil, when you were traveling around the country with, obviously, Carl Rove, I Love You, did any of these people who were celebrating bonfires, etc., did they have like white sheets with little holes and pointy hats? Were they around, perchance? Because you might have found that they were actually sort of engaging in another form of sacrifice there, but still, that's by the by. I'm sorry.
Were they dressed up as ghosts? Is that what you're saying? Did you like what I did there?
Simply Donald Trump wannabes. That's the key thing, but never mind. Send them back.
Wow. You get so political.
I know.
No, I did not ever encounter anything like that. But, you know, not in the north. Indiana's very, very far north, so you wouldn't really experience it there. That kind of social club. To which you were alluding.
Yeah, good to hear. Okay, Jessica, moving on. Any thoughts for yourself? Or any things you'd like to share with Phil about other things she's missed, such as Tara Bennett, obviously raving about the third season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and, of course, the second season
of
Gotham.
It has been a big improvement.
Oh.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 has been a big improvement. And if you've listened to your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, of course, we kind of predicted it would be, because there was a huge creative shakeup over the summer at Marvel, where the entire creative collaboration team, basically the team that was responsible for giving notes to all the movies and all, have been completely fired. They've all been let go. So now, yes, they still answer to the financial side of things, but basically for the first time, if you're a showrunner, you actually get to run your show. So we expected that would lead to an improvement, and indeed it has.
What about Gotham? Have you been watching those series?
No, because I'm not a teenager.
Okay.
So I'm not allowed to.
Okay. I bet you miss out on the
it's
vampire.
It's kind of like Logan's Run.
It's
like Logan's Run. When you get to be 30, you get retired. Yeah. That channel doesn't even work on my TV because it knows how old I am. So.
I was going to ask you, what is your opinion on Logan's Run?
Oh, well, I mean, I spend 45 minutes not necessarily talking about my opinion, but talking about my view of it. What I love about Logan's Run is exactly, in a nutshell, is exactly the thing that so many people want to dismiss about it, which is to say that it's silly, to say that it's, basically that it's a silly film. But the silliness really kind of belies the deep meaning that is entailed in the film. It really explores a great deal of terrain, symbolically, metaphorically, mythologically, psychologically, politically. It's very prescient in terms of its anticipation of the future. It had a lot to say about contemporary social issues at the time. But what's wonderful about it is it never took itself too seriously, and so therefore it really did have the chance to stand the test of time, like some great science fiction works before it, like Forbidden Planet, even Star Trek. You know, you can dismiss these things as silly because the costumes and the sets and a little bit of the tongue-in-cheek attitude, but they really had a lot on their mind and, more importantly, a lot in their hearts, whereas today, boy, filmmakers take themselves so seriously if they have something to say. And so I think a lot of time the tendency is to make works like that very ponderous today, and that doesn't invite people of all ages into exploration. So anyway, so that's my opinion on Logan's Run, is I think that the reason that it can speak, because if you talk to people who are fans of Logan's Run, boy, do they love it. They love it so much. It is such a deep love, and that's because of the fact that there is a silly element to it, not in spite of that fact.
My dad made me watch it once.
Made you watch it?
He did make me watch it.
Was this when he refused to teach you juggling, Jessica?
Yes. So basically, I still need to talk to him about that.
He refused to teach you juggling. You had to go to a different country to actually go to a location event with Midrick Drive to actually learn how to juggle scarves and beanbags.
My childhood was very hard.
And then your father
Alex.
Actually forces you to watch
how
Logan's Run.
How do you juggle scarves? Surely,
it's,
yeah, I don't get it.
It's like because it's the soft movement, you're able to think about it. You've got more time to think about
honestly,
it. And
she was like Shahrazad on I think there is some video footage that's around, actually. It's with the Rice family.
Yeah, yeah.
Challenge them next week. But yes, very good.
Well, you know, one of the continuing things that's so great about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., going back to that and apropos of this conversation, the one thing that they've done very well when they've done it well is that this is a show that doesn't take itself too seriously, which is so refreshing because we'd gotten to this age where, boy, comic book and superhero stories were taking themselves seriously, which only serves to make them all the more ludicrous. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is on a network here, ABC, where every show is so ridiculous, and yet at the same time, I'm talking about shows like How to Get Away with Murder and the new Quantico, and there's just on and on. They all have the same tone, and they all take themselves so seriously. They take their ridiculous premises so seriously, and that only serves to make them more ludicrous. And so, ironically, here's a show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which could not be more on the surface silly, and yet it actually is refreshing because it's the easiest to believe because it doesn't take itself too seriously. It has a sense of humor about itself, and I don't know. I just think the more I travel around the world and the more I listen, even politically, let's face it, we will listen to the people who are gifted with a certain sense of humor about themselves. Things that take themselves way too seriously, I think it tends to exclude people. So that's why I think Logan's Run is fun. But what was your experience once you were forced, as you say, forced to watch it?
Well, I thought it was a bit too long, to be fair. But when you were talking about its kind of symbolism, and I just thought that was really interesting because I could see that quite clearly as well. I must have been maybe 14 years old when I watched it. But wasn't it quite revolutionary? It was in the 70s, wasn't it, that it came out? Wasn't it quite revolutionary in the way it was filmed and the kind of special effects?
I don't know. I mean, we talked a little bit about this. I mean, it might have been hailed that way when it came out. I'm sure that that was part of promoting it. But in retrospect, I felt that, and I don't know, maybe Alex has a take on this, but one of the things we talked about was how intentionally it almost was a throwback film even at the time. Like, it begins with a great deal of model work. And I don't mean runway models. I mean, like, you know, miniatures of trains and things. And it begins with these models that are not photorealistic. And I thought that they were intentionally not photorealistic so that they would throw us back to childhood, to this idea, this concept of the fun of childhood toys, almost like we're entering into the dream of a child. And that if we can bring our sense of fun and childlike enthusiasm to this film, we will then be opened to all manner of wonders. So if it was marketed as being incredibly revolutionary in terms of its visual approach and the way that it was filmed, I think at the same time it really did consciously take a bit of a retro approach as well. What are your thoughts about that, Alex?
I have nothing to say about the matter, Phil, apart from, for the first time in my life, I was happy. Uh, And Jessica, as we move away from the Danger Man theme, you seem to have kind of, because Emma, you have actually sort of had another experience on a show in which the computer has crashed on us. The mini disc has decided it's simply spitting out stuff. It's refused to do anything else. Jessica, call the film. Emma, what has happened?
Well, it's not that spooky actually. My watch has stopped on Back to the Future Day.
Emma Tinson's watch has stopped on Back to the Future Day. Phil Leonis.
Maybe we should go EVA and replace the AE-35 unit.
Oh, my word. It's just, you know, let's reach out for that monolith. Oh, never mind. Still, you know, or as I'm proud to say every so often with every edition of the Midweek Drive, my God, it's full of stars. Sorry. 2010, Odyssey 2.
You know, how about this? There's a little tidbit that your British listeners might not know about that Back to the Future. Obviously, after today, all of Back to the Future will be in the past. But if you remember Back to the Future 2, one of the things it predicts of the year 2015 is that the Chicago Cubs would finally win a World Series, and they have the first chance to do so in more than 100 years. And the other thing was that they would beat the Miami baseball team to get there. And when Back to the Future was made, there was no Miami baseball team, but they predicted that accurately. So hats off to those sports enthusiasts from 1985 who visualized 30 years in the future so clearly.
And if only, Phil, you could have actually got your act together, we would have had Jaws 18 in 3D.
I know. Like, there was a lot of stuff that, you know, Spielberg got right. There was 3D movies, we were
Black
saying.
Screen TV.
But it was
Black
Robert Zemeckis
TV.
Who directed it. Steven Spielberg just produced it. Let's give credit where credit is due.
Sorry,
Don't forget the director.
But, you know, they got a lot of things right.
They did.
We were saying earlier about the glasses that are like a phone. It's like the Google Glass.
And
but we realised it was a bad idea,
obviously. Video chat as well.
Yeah, video chat.
But, you know, when Spielberg made Minority Report and... I think it was set, Alice, you probably know better than I, but I think it was set 30 years in the future when Minority Report came out.
13
and
years
so
ago.
He went and met with all the great minds that are visualizing and actually in production on what the future will look like in Silicon Valley, in Seattle, all the great places, and said, show me the future 30 years from now. And they all said... we can't do that because you literally would go insane if you saw how different the future will be. Instead, we'll show you the future 15 years from now and just say that that's the future. And when you watch Minority Report, it is amazing how much is already on the precipice of happening.
And that concludes the Phil Leonis contribution to...
Why the Twilight Zone theme? Why, like, why isn't it the Back to the Future theme? Why?
Because that would be a cliche, Phil,
and
we don't do cliches. You know, we thought a bit of Patrick McGoohan.
Yes, we do.
I thought we did, yeah.
Yeah, that's our stock in trade is cliches.
Jessica, number between 2 and 26, please.
16.
Don't do it. Don't fall into his trap.
I just did.
The best moment in any long journey that makes your dreams come true comes not on the day you realize they have, but on the day you realize how little they matter compared to loving the adventure they've inspired. Don't ask me why. I just know what I know. The universe. P.S. You've always been part of my journey.
It's like a location report writ large, really. That's it then. Thank you to Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Tara Bennett, Arthur Weingarten, Alana Rain, Brian Smith, Phil Leonis, and you, dear listener. Last two questions for Phil Leonis, please. Eva!
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have had an interesting telephonic link, yes.
And will we be hearing again from you soon?
I think Alex will be hearing from me in a matter of minutes.
Wow.
Very soon.
Listener will be back with them. Next week, of course, we'll be joined by Dylan Rice and lots of other exciting things. We might even have Steve Kirkby with magical musical things happening on the Midweek Drive. Plus, of course, Annette Andre is back with us. Phil Leonis back with us. Cameron Tilbury back with us. Anna Lewis as well. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be splendiferous. To Jessica Ward, Emma Tinson, and Eva McDonald, thank you. Can we all say bye-bye? One, two, three.
Oh. Bye.
Bye.
I might work on the rehearsal because I forgot to mention.
Should we try that again?
Yeah, Naomi Costley is coming up after the news, all being well. So let's all say goodbye. One, two, three.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.